ahead and get started with a couple of readings. And we'll start with a Bible verse and then share a quote with you as well. The Bible verse is from Isaiah 58, verses 6 through 10. You'll probably be somewhat familiar with it. It's from the New Revised Standard Version. I'm reading from the updated edition of the NRSV. Hear now these words. Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house when you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and He will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. And yet, blessing and understanding to the reading of those words. I'd also like to share a quote from Robert F. Kennedy with you. I've slightly edited it to make it a little more inclusive in the language, in which he said, "Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events. It is from numberless diverse acts of courage and belief that human history is shaped. Each time a person stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, they send forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current which can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance."
In my research this week, I found something called the Songs of Justice Project. It features 10 original songs and lyric videos that inform historical relations between Canada and its Indigenous peoples. The songs represent a spectrum of expression. Some songs challenge the apologetics of colonialism, exposing discrimination and genocide. Others celebrate the perseverance and goodness of Indigenous pathways and teachings. 5 songs draw attention to the historical and cultural and current significance, both spiritual and political, of Louis Riel and the Métis, Native Métis people. This is Craig Ginn's project. He has written and produced each song. Craig Ginn is a senior instructor at the Department of Classics and Religion at the University of Calgary, where he's active within the campus community of Indigenous scholars and staff. His current research includes religion and popular music, Indigenous traditions and worldviews. He's active in interdisciplinary research also. He serves as a co-investigator in a community-based study exploring the links between health, spirituality, and well-being within the Métis Nation of Alberta. As an academic and musician, Ginn seeks to add his voice to decolonization efforts in education. He hopes the songs will be informative and motivational, providing insights into forced assimilation, displacement, and discrimination experienced by Indigenous peoples. "Let Justice Roll," that's the song I'm going to do, portrays the devastating effects of the residential school system and challenges the apologetics of colonialism. There's another song that narrates a Laurier Club event where a Grassy Narrows activist was removed by security guards while Prime Minister Justin Trudeau watched on and mocked her for donating to the Liberal Party of Canada. Another song narrates the heartbreaking story of forced relation and genocide of the Saisi Dene in Manitoba. I may be mispronouncing the native names. But this is Let Justice Roll, and I found it, the song, on YouTube. The video is very, very, very much worth seeing. In the same breath that they sing his praise, he is dignified in monuments that divide this land. Schools and statues celebrate colonial man. You cannot buy, sell, or trade without the image of his face. He is above the law, Confederation pardons him from all disgrace. Let justice roll like the mighty river, righteousness flow like a healing stream, where now the glory of foreign altar part the waters for a people to be free. Every tribe, every people, every sacred ground, every language, every nation, subjects to his grounds. Sons and daughters, they were exiled from their villages and homes. He cut their hair, burned their clothes, their dignity, to turn their hearts from the pathways they had known. Let justice roll like the mighty river, righteousness flow like a healing stream, where down the glory
I'm really
this morning is entitled Do Justice. Except now I'm kind of wishing I had named it Let Justice Roll. Thank you for that powerful song. In many ways, this talk today is about putting your beliefs into action. One of the folks from history who most certainly did that was Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Yesterday was International Holocaust Remembrance Day, and I have to say, with the genocide that Israel is responsible for in Gaza, that day of remembrance really hits differently this year. But if anything, Bonhoeffer's will to put his beliefs into action is a story we all need to take into consideration, maybe even particularly when it comes to speaking against the horrors happening in Gaza. As many of you know, with Hitler's rise to power, Bonhoeffer left his fiancée and a wonderful job at Union Theological in New York City to travel back to Nazi Germany. And he was accused of plotting to kill Hitler, probably was, and was put into jail for 2 years. And just two weeks before that concentration camp was liberated, he was executed there. I would say he's definitely a person to listen to when it comes to matching your beliefs with your actions. So I'm going to start with just three short quotes from him on that topic. The first one: we are not to simply bandage the wounds of the victims beneath the wheels of injustice. We are to drive a spoke into the wheel itself. Second from him: we must finally stop appealing to theology to justify our reserved silence about what the state is doing, for that is nothing but fear. Quotes a scripture: open your mouth for the ones who is voiceless, say, he says in, for who in the church today still remembers that that is the least of the Bible's demands in times such as these? And then the last one from him: Christianity stands or falls with its revolutionary protests against violence, arbitrariness, and pride of power, and with its plea for the weak. Christians are doing too little to make these points clear. Christendom adjusts itself far too easily to the worship of power. Christians should give more offense, shock the world far more than they are doing right now. So it's all about letting what you believe speak through the way you live your life. It's almost as if to say, I cannot hear your words without your actions amplifying them. What is the message of our lives based on our actions? Both as individuals, as a church, as a spiritual community. Do our lives cultivate justice for not only ourselves, but also for others as well? What is the message of our lives? And in times like these, in times when majority of Americans are experiencing increasingly difficult times, times of divisions and life's loss, times of struggle, even of hopelessness. In those kinds of times, what is the message of our lives and our communities? Frankly, I'm a bit ashamed of the church, the capital C church. The church is an institution, not our individual church. I mean, don't get me wrong. plenty of churches and other spiritual communities do lots and lots of brilliant things. Frankly, were it not for the missional efforts of the church, I hate to even think how much worse some people's lives would be. As an example, the church where I last served, where Stephanie also served, that was a small church, but we managed to feed hundreds of people each month. They actually still do it. Some of you go and lend a helping hand in doing so. And the original concept there was to feed people who had sort of slipped through the charity cracks and probably had very few options left. So feeding them, that's a good thing. It's a really, really good thing. But still, I'm a bit ashamed of the church, in capital C, church. But like I said, don't get me wrong. Plenty of churches and other spiritual communities do lots and lots of just brilliant things. As a matter of fact, historians note, this is an interesting piece of history, historians note that in the course of human history, organized charitable giving didn't occur until the 4th century, and it was directly connected to Christian charity. In the medieval period, Christianity began establishing hospitals that, instead of being like the Greeks, hospitals which were founded on and based on reciprocal hospitality, or the Romans ones that were based on sort of family obligations, these Christian hospitals, for the first time ever, were founded to cater to social groups that were marginalized by poverty, sickness, and age. And honestly, I could go on and on with a list of churches doing good works like that. I could go on and on, including the reality that in the U.S., the progressive end of the Christian church has always been on the forefront of publicly advocating for issues of social justice and equality. And while the progressive arm has been doing those kinds of things, unfortunately, as a whole, we've become a lot less than we are meant to be as a spiritual community. We are more than aware of what we should be doing. People like Martin Luther King and Dorothea Day to spiritual communities focused on helping those in need. We've been given the examples of what that looks like. And then the majority of the capital C church, even though they've been given what it looks like, proceed to mainly apply band-aids when our faith calls us to stop the wheels of oppression from turning. We feed a person for a day. We turn their power back on for now. We give them shelter for a night. And that's a good thing. But in general, we, the church, Big C Church, we fall miserably short of challenging and changing the systems that will have those same people starving in a week, sitting in the dark next month, sleeping on the streets all too soon. We are more than aware of what we should be doing. We've been given examples of what that looks like, but we busy ourselves with the goings-on of running a spiritual community, placing an overemphasis on what the community can do for me rather than what I can do for the community and the larger community that it sits in. And when we do, we miss out on a spiritual fullness, a spiritual satisfaction that's waiting for us and for the communities we serve. All too often, we let our silent good deeds be the end of our efforts to help, dooming those who are suffering to continued suffering under the oppressive and cyclical nature of systems designed to keep the least of these in their place. You see, most spiritual communities have become much better and much more comfortable at giving people a hand out rather than lending them a hand up. Put simply, we prefer the partially self-serving feelings of charity to the possibly self-sacrificing realities of justice. Charity does help those in need. It does, but only temporarily. Who it always helps, who charity always helps, is those of us who have a need to help, who feel it is our calling to aid those in need. Charity lets us feel good that we are doing something to respond to a need in a world that is overwhelmed with people in need. And there's really no risk in it. And people are usually very supportive of us doing those kinds of things. Justice, on the other hand, is hard. It frequently requires a great deal of sacrifice. And you probably aren't going to get a lot of people cheering you along the way. Probably quite the opposite. As a matter of fact, Bonhoeffer would remind us that you might get locked up for a few years and maybe even eventually executed, if not literally, at least figuratively. So, most individuals, most spiritual communities simply don't do much justice. They favor charity. Justice looks like words put into action. Justice looks like activism. Spiritual communities tend to shy away from that. Justice requires you to not make nice with abusive systems, to rock the boat a bit, and to take a stand on issues that are frequently political hot buttons. Or as philosopher and theologian Dr. Cornel West would remind us, never forget that justice is what love looks like in public. Too many churches, that sounds very unchurch-like. Too many churchgoers think being church means being liked. And all that standing up for something means standing against something, and we just don't like the thought of people not liking us because of it. So the systems and the power structures that have a negative impact and effect on the marginalized, minorities, and the poor, well, why risk having your friends think you're being too political or have them think that we aren't being nice, polite, docile, a reflection of Jesus? Well, because Jesus was not docile and nice, at least not the way people have come to think of him. He not only confronted systems of injustice, but he tried to teach us to do the same thing. Jesus stood in public squares, not only proclaiming leper lives matter, poor lives matter, lives of other religions matter, Gentile lives matter, women's lives matter, but he also took every opportunity to confront those who were in control of the systems of power structures that kept outsiders on the outside. He did it standing in the tradition of the great prophets of Judaism who never failed to stand up and against abuse of power. They risked everything over and over again. They were frequently ran out of town or put to death for it. And in modern times, we have examples of people like Dr. King who also lost their lives for it. Maybe that's what we're afraid of, the difficulties we'd have to face were we to be more justice-focused. I'm not, I'm not sure. I certainly don't think it's because we'd rather see the least of us carry the overwhelming burdens of society structured to benefit the wealthy than we would to be thought of as anything less than nice. Maybe we just haven't thought it through enough. Maybe we haven't thought it through enough. Maybe we just need new leaders to stand up and say with passion and prophetic voice that Dr. King used when he said, philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause the philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice which make philanthropy necessary. Then again, maybe we are the new leaders. It's time for us to reclaim the place of prophetic voice in the midst of a struggling society. As the wealthiest of folk, through the voice and influence of the almighty dollar, step on and abuse the poorest in our nation by co-opting our government, which is supposedly for and by the people. As they co-opt our government, we must reclaim not just our prophetic voice, but recognize that voice must be amplified by our actions. Now, don't hear me incorrectly. We must not stop doing the necessary and much needed work of charity. We must not stop there. We must push on, risking ourselves, risking ridicule, risking places of privilege, and reclaim the biblical and prophetic voice of justice. We must stand in the footsteps of the likes of Dr. King and Dorothea Day, for without justice, charity falls short. Charity is necessary, but charity without justice is complicit in supporting the systems that create the need for charity. We must realize that we are the justice makers. We are the benders of the moral arc of the universe. The persistence of our faith in matters of equality, freedom, and justice matter because they are the weight. They are the momentum. They are the effort and the actions which continue to move further down the arc of justice towards a world that more closely mirrors what God desires for it and for us. Thank you.
trail storks. Songs of Love and Justice. He's an orchestral composer. He, in 1992, he wrote this orchestral composition that sets the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. This performance was recorded with the Dvorak Symphony Orchestra, Prague, under the baton of black conductor Julius P. Williams. The performance only exists as an audio recording. The audio recording is accompanied by images as well as the text set by the composer. The alternative rock band Linkin Park have a song called Wisdom, Justice, and Love, which is based on a 1967 quote from Martin Luther King, in which he talks about the connection between his feelings on Vietnam and the civil rights movement. King laments that the horrors of modern life cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. King's address is one of three samples of notable speeches by American political figures on that album by Linkin Park. The album's called A Thousand Suns. The other two audio quotes that they use are by workers' rights activist Mario Savio, and also the father of the atom bomb, Robert Oppenheimer. Mike Shinoda, the lead vocalist for Linkin Park, has said, "I just felt in all three of those cases, those speeches, when you hear them now, resonate in a way very differently from when they were first delivered, but they apply to things that are going on today." So, what am I doing? I took those speeches that were used by that Dvorak Symphony, and I put them in the kind of with the same chord structure that is used in the Linkin Park song. In the Linkin Park song, if you listen to it, it's a bit disturbing. You first hear Martin Luther King's voice very clearly with sort of the electronic chords underneath of it. As he goes through the course of the speech, his voice morphs into a very robotic, technical, numb sound. It's very interesting what they decided to do with that. So here are the speeches that were used by the Dvorak Symphony are on the topics of justice, difficulties, decisions, and love. When evil men plot, good men must plan. When evil men burn and bomb, good men must build and bind. When evil men shout ugly words of hatred, good men must commit themselves to the glories of love. When evil men would seek to perpetuate an unjust status quo, good men must seek to bring into being a real order of justice. An order of justice. Justice. It is difficult to like some people. Like is sentimental. It is difficult to like someone bombing your home. It is difficult to like somebody threatening your children. It is so difficult to like some people. Difficult to like some people. Like is a man. But Jesus says, love them. Jesus says, love them. For love is greater than like. Every man must decide whether he will walk in the light. Every man must decide whether he will walk in the light of creative altruism or the starkness of destructive selfishness. This is the judgment. Life's most persistent and urgent question. What are you doing? What are you doing for others? Everyone must decide. What are you doing? Love is the only force. Love is the only force capable of transforming an enemy into a friend. Of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling difference is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from the dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. 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 Cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love.
Thank you. Powerful. Let's take a moment, bow our heads together. We live in a world that has managed to very pleasantly distract us from the injustices that exist within it. There's just so much to do, so much with which to busy ourselves, that it is easy to lose track of the real needs in this world to which we are called to bring justice. It's just so profoundly and sadly human to get wrapped up in protecting what we have managed to gain in a way that overlooks how much so many others do not have. Too frequently, our lives leave little room for justice. In this moment, let us pledge to renew our efforts and energy to help those for whom we should be advocates every day, but so far have not always figured out how to do so. In this moment, let us pledge to renew our efforts and energy to help those who are sick and can't afford health care. Let us renew our pledge, because too frequently our lives leave little room for justice. Let us renew our pledge to help those who have no option but to sort through the trash to find their next meal. Let us renew our pledge to help those who have no close friends or just need one person to truly care. To renew our pledge to help those for whom shelter is a cardboard box with a plastic lining. We renew our pledge to help those who have lost their jobs and are looking for work, but must at times endure the condescending judgment of others while they do. Let us renew our pledge to work to aid the people around the world who will die today due to war, due to lack of food or clean water, while our nation consumes enough game day snacks to feed them all. We know we cannot solve all the world's problems on our own, but may we be inspired to try. May the justice we so freely share with those closest to us, or that we at times share with folks we just barely know. May the sharing of that justice and love inspire us to lives that are ever flowing with love and justice for all people. Amen. See this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your lives. And may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you meet.
This is John Prince's body. I'm doing the Peacemaker's version. It was popular in the Union during the Civil War. The original lyrics were, if you didn't look at the back of the day or sheet, I had to give that to you. Yeah. According to an account from 1889, the original lyrics were a collective effort. If you read them, you're looking at, what does all this have to do with John Brown? It's interesting. With a collective effort by a group of Union soldiers who were referring to the famous John Brown, but also humorously to a Sergeant John Brown of their own battalion. They were kind of teasing him. Now, over the years, many authors have claimed credit for original lyrics or the tune or added verses, and there's a lot of history with this song. It's been used for everything. It's been a British sea shanty, a wedding song from Georgia, a Swedish drinking song. It's been a lot of things. But when we're talking about people who sacrificed for justice, let's talk about John Brown. There's a book called The Good Lord Bird that's written by James McBride, and there's a mini-series that's on Showtime that you can stream that Ethan Hawke plays John Brown in. I don't know if y'all saw it. It came out a couple years ago. It is really good. It's got humor. You see guest appearances by Frederick Douglass and Harriet Tubman. It's got all kinds of religion in it. It is funny, and it is bold, and it is every and gut-wrenching, and it's John Brown story. It's really worth seeing. But this is Pete Singer's version of John Brown. John Brown's body by the moldering in the grave. John Brown's body by the moldering in the grave. John Brown's body by the moldering in the grave. But his soul goes marching on. The stars above in heaven are looking kindly down. The stars above in heaven are looking kindly down. The stars above in heaven are looking kindly down. Traitor.